Rivka Basi Rachmiel, Yehuda Ben Yisrael, Mordechai Yosef Ben Zev, Chaya Basi Yeshua Yerufam, Shraga Faivo Ben Michal Halevi, Rochel Bas Yaakov, Rachma Bas Shraga Faivo Halevi, Chana Bas Shraga Faivo Halevi, Adela Bas Shraga Faivo Halevi, Hashmangel Ben Shmuel, Yamin Benish Ben Shmuel Eva Kohen, Edel Bas Namalat Kohen, Shimon Ben Akam Yosef, and Yecheskel Leib Ben Chayim. We begin on the very bottom of Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, last line. So yesterday we had seen a machlokes tanoim between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. What happens in the event that someone gives an Eved Kanani money with the stipulation that your owner has no rights to this money? Rav Meir said it's very nice and all, but your stipulation is meaningless. Once you give the Eved money, automatically, Mashkan Eved Kan Rabo, it belongs to the owner. That's it. You can't avoid that. The Chum said no. The stipulation is effective in limiting or restricting or preventing the owner from having rights to that money. So the Gemara now asks, V'rami Rav Meir Ajab Meir, V'rami Drabanan Ajabanan. I will pose a contradiction to what we just saw was the opinion of Rav Meir and the opinion of the Chachamim. The Tanya, because the Braisa says, now its background, the din is that when someone has Maisa Sheni produce, which has Kedusha, and he wishes to transfer the Kedusha from the Maisa Sheni produce onto money, so that he can then take the money to Yerushalayim and then purchase food there with it, the din is that when one redeems his own Maisa Sheni, he must add on a chomesh. He must add on an additional 25% to the value of the produce that he is being poda. But that's only true, the din is, if it's someone being poda his own maaser sheni. But if someone is being poda someone else's maaser sheni, there is no need then to add on the additional chomesh. The question that Bryce is now going to discuss is what happens when a married woman is poda the maaser sheni of her husband. How do we view that? Is that someone being poda their own maaser sheni? Is that someone being poda someone else's maaser sheni? That's the question. So the Bryce says as follows. Ein isha poda maaser sheni b'lo chomesh. That according to the Chachamim, a married woman who redeems the Maaser Sheni of her husband must add on a chomesh, because we do view it as if it is someone being poda their own Maaser Sheni. That's Chachamim. Whereas Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says in the name of Rabbi Meir, Isha poda Maaser Sheni below chomesh. No, a married woman is allowed to redeem Maaser Sheni without adding on an additional chomesh. So, machlokes of Meir and the Chachamim, when the married woman is redeeming Maaser Sheni of her husband, is there a need to add on a chomesh, as the Chachamim say? What do we say? No need to add on a chomesh, because it's like someone else being pulled to the Maaser Sheni, and that is Shitas of Meir. So, Gemara now questions, what is the exact scenario of this case? Hey Chidam, what's the case? Ilema bezuze de Baal, if the money being used belongs to the husband, umaisa de Baal, and the produce that is the maaser sheni that you are removing the kedusha from belongs to the husband, so then shluchu se de Baal ka'avda. She is simply acting as an agent of her husband, and it should be obvious, according to all opinions, that this is a case of one being poda his own maaser sheni, and there should be a need, according to everybody, to add on a chomesh. So why would Reb Meir say that there's no need to add on a chomesh? Gemara says, okay, it must be Ella. The Gemara says it must be. The case is different. The case is Bezuze Dida. It must be that it is her own money, Umaiser Didei, and it's his, her husband's produce. Maybe that's the case. Maybe the reason why Reb Meir says there's no reason to add on a chomesh is because it's her own money and her husband's meiser. So the Gemara asks, well, if that's the case, that's her own money and her husband's meiser, ish amar rachmana velo isha. The Torah speaks of the requirement to add on a chomesh when a man is redeeming the meiser, but not when a woman is redeeming her husband's meiser. So the Gemara is asking, it should be obvious, if this is in fact the case, that when a married woman is using her own money to redeem her husband's meiser sheni, in that case, it should be obvious according to everybody that there is no need to add on a chomesh. In which case, why would the chachamim in this brisa say that there is a requirement to add on a chomesh? Once again, if it's her money and her husband's meiser, the pasuk speaks only of ish mi meisro, says Rashi, a man and his own meiser, not an isha and her husband's meiser. If it's her money and her husband's meiser, there should be no need, according to anybody, to add on a chomesh. So that cannot be the case of the brisa either. So el lav ke agavna, it must be, the Gemara says, it must be, the case we're discussing is the following. The akni lo acher mana, someone else gave this married woman some money. The amar lo, and he said to her, amanas shetifti bo es hamaiser, I'm giving you this money on condition that you use it only for redemption of meiser sheni produce. Oh, it's not yours entirely, such that your husband then would own it as well. It's been given to you exclusively for this one purpose, to be used for pidyon meiser sheni, such that you shouldn't be obligated to add on an additional chomesh. And if that's the case of the brisa, that kind of resembles the case we had previously, where someone gives an eved kanani money and says, I'm giving this to you on condition that you use it to buy your freedom and nothing else. Yet the Gemara asks, v'ipcha shemana lehu. But if this is the case of this brisa, what emerges is that the opinions here are the opposite of what they were in the previous brisa. Because here what happens, someone gives this married woman some money and says, I'm giving you this money only to be used to be poda the meiser sheni of your husband. The chachamim say, sorry, she's still chayav in a chomesh. It's like it's the husband redeeming his own meiser sheni. Rav Meir says, no, stipulation is effective. It's like someone else redeeming the meiser sheni money. No need to add on a chomesh. But that's the exact opposite of what we saw before with a man who gives an eved kanani money and says, on condition, it's just used to free you. There, Rav Meir said the condition is not effective. Here, Rav Meir says the condition is effective. So the Gemara is asking us here, it's in the case of giving money to an eved kanani and the case of giving money for purposes to a married woman for purposes of pidyon meiser sheni. That's the question. So two answers in the Gemara. Amar Abaye. Abaye says as follows. Epuch, simply flip around the names in this brisa. It's Rav Meir who says the stipulation is not effective and you need to add on an additional chomesh. And it's the Chachamim who say the stipulation is effective and no need to add on an additional chomesh. If that's the case, then the opinions quoted in this brisa do actually work in tandem with the opinions quoted in the previous brisa. That's Abaye's shot. Rav Amar Abaye says no. L'olam lo sepuch. No need to change around the opinions in this brisa. So we're in fact dealing with a case where a married woman is given money on condition that she use it just for purposes of pidyon meiser sheni, and the goal of that stipulation was to prevent the need for an additional chomesh. So why does a mayor say the condition is effective and the chum say it's not effective? Answers Rava, v'acha, here's the case. B'meiser d'asa mibeinasha askinan. This is talking about peros of meiser sheni that grew from a field that the married woman inherited from her deceased father. So the field becomes nechse melug, belongs to her. Ordinarily, the husband has the right to the peros, but here, because it's meiser sheni peros, there is a machlokas tanaim if the husband has the right to these peros or not. The Gemara is going to explain why. So bein nasha means that her deceased husband. But sometimes when you hear a ksuba being read at a chuppah, ordinarily the phrase found in the ksuba is mi be'avuha, from her father's home. But if the father of the kala has already died, the phrase used is mi be'nasha. Nasha means forgotten. He's deceased, he's passed on, he's forgotten. He's no longer in her life, in a certain sense. So here the Gemara Machlokas is as follows. Reb Meir Tamei, Reb Meir holds, in accordance with his opinion, the Omar, he ordinarily says, Meiser Mamon Hektishu, that Meiser Sheni produce is considered to belong to Hektish. If that's so, we don't apply the usual rule of, oh, Peros Nechsem Lo belongs to the husband, not when it comes to Meiser Sheni that belongs to Hektish. And therefore, Velo Kani Le Baal, the husband has no rights to these Peros, according to Meir. If that's the case, that the Peros Meiser Sheni do not belong to the husband, so then when the married woman redeems those Peros Meiser Sheni, and the assumption now is that we're redeeming the Peros with his money. She's redeeming this Peros Meiser Sheni with his money, but the Peros are not his because the Peros are Mamon Hektish. Well then, if she's using his money to be poda Peros Meiser Sheni that do not belong to him, then there's no need to add on a chumash according to Meir. Whereas Rabbanan Tamay, Rabbanan L'shitasam, the Amri they say Mamon Hejidhu. Meiser Sheni is not considered hektish; it's considered to belong to an ordinary individual. In which case, it's subject to the regular dinim of Peros of Nechsei Melog that belong to the husband. But Kani Le Baal, it is considered his Peros. So when she redeems it using his money, Hilkach Shlechusa de Baal Ka'avda, she's acting on his behalf as his agent, using his money to redeem his peros. That's how Chacham say there is an obligation to add on an additional chomesh. So what we're saying here is that the machlokas of Meir Chachamim here really is only a machlokas about whether Meiser Sheni is Mamon Gavoh or Mamon Hektish. That's what it comes down to. And that will determine whether the peros Meiser Sheni of Nechsei Melog belong to the husband or not. And that in turn will determine whether when she's being poda these Peros Meiser Sheni with his money, is it chayev in a chomesh or not? Okay, next two dots. The din in the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim is that if someone injures his eved kanani such that he knocks out the eved's eye or the eved's tooth, the eved goes free. That's the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. The Gemara quotes a brisa. The brisa says, Tana, we learn here a brisa, Yotzei b'shein v'ayin, the eved kanani goes free if his tooth is knocked out, his eye is blinded, the rashe evarim she'enan chozim. But in addition to those two parts of the body, there are a total of 24 body parts that if they are severed as a result of an injury inflicted by the owner of the slave, slave goes free. So the Gemara asks, B'shlom Hashem v'ayin k'sivi. I understand the pasuk explicitly speaks of freeing the Eved when his tooth is knocked out or his eye is blinded. El Rashi Var Menalan, how does the Braisa know that the same is true when these other body parts are severed by the owner of the Eved? So the Gemara says, Dumya d'shein v'ayin, because we derive it from the fact that the Torah speaks of knocking out a tooth and blinding his eye. How so? Ma shein v'ayin mumin shebegalui. Those are both visible injuries. Ve'inan cholzim, and they're irreversible. Once the tooth is knocked out, the eye is blinded, you can't cure it. Af kol, so too, we assume, mumin shebegalui, ve'inan cholzim. So too, anytime the Eved suffers at the hands of the owner a visible injury that is irreversible, he goes free. So Gemara asks, 1 second, how can you derive all of those dinim from the examples in the Torah of Shein v'Ayin? Gemara asks, the Eima nehavu Shein v'Ayin kishnei k'suvim habam ke'achar. Well, why don't we view the Shein and Ayin as two psukim that teach you the same halacha? And the din is the kol shnei k'suvim habam ke'achar ein melamdim. The din is, if the Torah felt it necessary to tell me the same halacha in two different cases, what you see from that is that the halacha is limited to those two cases. Because had it been a broader application, the Torah would have said it once and allowed you to derive it from that once to every other case. In fact, the Torah mentions it twice means it applies only to these two cases. Rabbi says, no, tzricha. The Torah needed to tell me this din, that the eved goes free when injured by his owner, in both the case of an eye injury and in the case of a tooth injury. I could not have derived one from the other. Why? Because the kasa rachman hashem, had the Torah just said that eved goes free when his tooth is knocked out, I would have thought, havamina, hafilu, shein, dechala. I would have thought, even if his baby tooth is knocked out, he goes free.
Milk tooth.
Kasa rachmana. Ayin. The Torah tells me no. Dafka, an injury like the eye, which is not going to be replaced by any other eye, obviously. But a baby tooth that is going to be replaced by an adult tooth, that is not an injury for which the Eved gets to go free. The E kasa rachmana ayin. Had the Torah just said the din is with regard to an Eved losing his eye. Havamina, I would have thought, Ma'ayin shenivra imo, that an eye is a body part that was present at birth. So I would have thought, af kol shenivra imo. Maybe the only time an eved goes free as a result of an injury inflicted by the owner is when it was a body part that was present since birth. Aval shein, but a tooth that obviously grows in after birth, lo. I would have thought maybe that is not reason enough to free the eved. So tzricha, so the Torah therefore needs to tell me that even with regard to a tooth being knocked out, despite the fact that it wasn't present at birth, it still is reason for the Eved to go free. So I need the Torah to tell me this din both with regard to a tooth and with regard to an eye, and I can then derive all other Rasha Evarim, all other visible, irreversible injuries from these two to say that Eved goes free in all of those cases. So the Gemara asks, "V'ema kiyake klal," and the Torah says, "V'chiyake ish," when a man strikes his eved. That's a very general reference. Shein v'ayin. The Torah then speaks specifically of knocking out a tooth, knocking out an eye, prat. That's a very specific example. And in general, the rule is klal uprat. When the Torah speaks first in general terms and then in very specific terms, ein b'chlal elamash v'prat. We limit the application of the halacha to only those specific examples mentioned. So if that's the case, the Gemara asks, Shein v'ayin in, midach min alo. Why don't we limit this din to only a case where the injury is one of the tooth or the eye, not to any other scenario? Answers the Gemara, lachafshi yishalchanu. When the pasuk concludes, both with regard to discussing the eye and the tooth, it says, lachafshi yishalchanu, send him free. Chazar v'kalal. So that word yishalchanu is a general reference. That's a klal. Now we have a klal, prat, uklal. We have a general reference, a very specific reference, and a general reference yet again. And the rule in such cases is, I atadon ela k'ein haprat. You apply the din to any case that resembles the specific examples mentioned. That's how we conclude as follows. The eye, the tooth, are visible and irreversible. When they are knocked out, so too, anytime the eved is injured in a very visible, irreversible way, the eved goes free.
This pasuk ends v'chafshi yishalchenu tachas eino.
Two different psukim. The first one says tachas eino, next one says tachas shino. It's two consecutive psukim.
Okay.
First one speaks about the eye, second speaks about the tooth.
Okay, I can't see that for you.
So The Gemara then asks, well, ima haprat mefurash mumin shebegoloi ubatal memlachto ve'eno choser. Well, maybe you should add that the psukim speak of the tooth or the eye, which are visible injuries, irreversible injuries, but also batal memlachto. As a result of the injury, that body part becomes unfunctional. So maybe we should argue af kol mumin shebegoloi ve'ein chozer ubatal mamlachto. Maybe we should limit the scenarios in which the eved is freed as a result of an injury to a visible body part to cases where that part of the body that was injured now loses its function. Allah matanya, why then does the Braisa say talash bizkano v'dil del bo etzem? If the owner grabs the eved's beard and as a result of yanking dislocates some sort of bone in the jaw. Eved yotze behem l'cheiris. The Eved goes free in that case as well. But the Gemara is bothered It seems like that is a case where there is no loss of function. There was nothing that was being done previously with that bone that can now no longer be done. So if you're deriving all dinim from the case of Shein Va'ayin, why do we include this case as well? If this case doesn't resemble Shein Va'ayin in that the injury we're discussing is not one that results in loss of function, that particular body part? Answers the Gemara, L'chafshi yishalchenu read Buyuhu. The concluding phrase, L'chafshi yishalchenu, is an inclusive phrase. And Rashi says what we're suggesting now is that it's not viewed as a klal, pradu klal, which results in a more limited application of the din. It's viewed as a ribui, miut, and ribui, which results in a broader application of the din, even to a case where there's no bitul malacha that results from that particular injury. So the Gemara asks, well, if that's the case, v'i ribuyuhu, if you're viewing this phrase as a much more inclusive term, afilu hikahu al yada v'tzamsa v'sofa lachzo nami, why don't we say you should free the Eved even in a case where you caused, as a result of the injury, the hand to shrivel up and it's going to ultimately be restored? Why don't you say in that case also that you should free him? Alama Tanya, why does the Braisa say, Hikahu al yada v'tzamsa, if you strike him on the hand and it shrivels, so for lachshon, it's going to be cured ultimately. Ein Eved yotzev alecheres, the Eved doesn't go free. Well, if you're learning the pasuk to be a riboy, miut and riboy, as a much more inclusive reference, why don't you free him in this case as well, even though it's sofa lachzor? That says the Gemara, im kein shein va'ayin mai hanalei. Because the Torah is limiting the applications by speaking of dafka of a shein and ayin. Shein va'ayin implies that the injury is not sofa lachzor. It's not going to be reversible. So that's why if it's sofa lachzor, if it is reversible, we do not free that.
Question about ribui and miut. And klal uprad, the same pasuk could be used either klal uprad or ribui miut. Is it because certain mandiomers hold from one, not the other?
Yes,
I like that. Okay, and that's like a gzeirah shava handed down from the rabbi.
Rashi elsewhere speaks of sometimes I'm always darshan pesukim b'derech ribui miut ribui, and others are always darshan it b'derech klal uprad or klal. Seems to be a difference of. Drash, right, had a Dash from Sukkah, I believe so.
And they must have received it from the Rebbeim then.
Presumably,
like
yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Mark continues. Tana by the New Brisa says as follows. Bekulan Eved Yotzebehem L'cheiris. An Eved, in all of these cases of Chaf Dal Rosh Eivarim, the Eved goes free. The Tzorach gets Shichur Divrei B'Shimon. Shimon says, when you feed the Eved, you still have to give him Eishtar Shikur. The Meir Omer and Otzarach. The Meir says no need for Eishtar Shikur. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Tzarach. Rabbi Eliezer, like Rabbi Shimon, says yes, Eishtar Shikur. Rabbi Tarfon Omer and Otzarach. Rabbi Tarfon, like a Meir, no Eishtar Shikur. Rabbi Kiva Omer Tzarach. Rabbi Kiva, siding with Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Eliezer, says you need Eishtar Shikur. Hamachrim Lefnei Chachamim, those who try to, in the presence of the Chachamim, make the final compromise decision. Omrim, they said, Nirin, Divrei, Rabbi Tarfon, B'Shein, V'Ayin. We hope, like Rabbi Tarfon, that there is no need for a Shtar Shichur in the case of an injury resulting in the loss of a tooth or an eye. Shatara Zachsalo, because after Torah says explicitly he goes free. So no need for Shtar Shichur there. Divrei Rabbi Kiva B'Sharivarim, we'll look at Rabbi Kiva, who said that he needs a shtar shikur, and he's dealing with other body parts that were knocked out or are severed or injured. Hovu klas chachamim hu, because those are only a penalty of the chachamim. Therefore, you have to add a shtar shikur. Asks the Gemara, kenasu, those are only a rabbinic penalty. Karoi kadashin, what do you mean? We darshaned from psukim that chaf dal rosh eivarim are the body parts that, if injured in an irreversible way, the Eved goes free. That's a din d'oraisa. So my answer is, elahol umidrash chachamim. The reason that the machriim paskin, that there's a need for shtar shichur with any body part other than shein va'ayin, is because those dinim are derived from a drasha. It's not beferish in the pasuk. So Tosis is still bothered. I don't understand. Beferish, drasha, either one are dinim d'oraisa. Why should you require shtar shichur by the drasha and not by the beferish in the pasuk? So Ben Tam says as follows. Since not everyone is aware of the drasha, if an Eved Kenani has a different part of the body severed that results in him going free, people who are not familiar with the drasha might think he's still an Eved. In order to avoid that rumor from spreading, Chacham said, even though it's a din d'oraisa, since people are not aware of it, you have to give him a shtar shichur in that case, which Ben Tam says means the shtar shichur is a drabanan requirement. The shtar shichur is a drabanan takana. It's not required mehatara. That's a Ben Tam. Okay. Moving on. My time with Reb Shimon. Why does Reb Shimon say that in this case of Rasha Evarim, that there is a need for shtar shichur? Answers the Gemara. Yolif shiluach, shiluach meisha. The term shiluach is found in this context of the Eved Kenani going free because of the injury sustained at the hands of his owner. And the term shiluach is also used b'shulchami beso, in the context of a divorce. So, comparing the two, says Rabbi Shimon, means the following. Ma'isha b'shtar, a woman whose divorce requires a get, af evanami b'shtar, so to an Eved Kenani going free because of the injury that he sustained, requires a shtar shichur, requires a document as well. That's Reb Shimon. Reb Meir says no. I kasav chafshi libasof. Had the Torah just said at the end of the phrase that he should be sent free, yishalchenu chafshi, then kidikarmat, then you're right. Had the Torah said, yishalchenu chafshi, send him free, I would have said, like you're saying, okay, there is a need for shiluach. Shiluach requires a shtar, as it does in the case of a divorced woman. So here too, you have to give him a shtar shechor. However, says Rabbi Meir, hashta dekosav lachafshi yishalchenu, but the pasuk speaks first of lachafshi, and then it speaks of yishalchenu. Havale chafshi meikar, that implies that he's automatically, instantly, completely freed before there's any discussion of the word shiluach. Hence, there's no need for a shtar shechor. Tana ben the Brisa says, "Hiko al eino b'sama al ozda v'chersha." You strike him on his eye, and you blind him on his ear, and he becomes deaf. Evidence ben l'cheres, you free the eved right away. Neged eino v'eino roa. But if it wasn't a direct strike, rather Rashi interprets this to mean you banged his eye against the wall. Can't see now. Keneged ozno ben ashmeya, or you yelled into his ear, and now he doesn't hear anymore. So then, the Brisa says, the din is, ein eved yosven l'cheres. No need to free the eved. So Amar Rav Shem l'Ravashi, Rav Shem asks Ravashi, l'meimer dekol l'av klomu, that means that yelling at him and causing deafness is not the same as striking him on his ear. But Tana Rav Baruch Eskel, Ram Baruch Eskel taught as follows, Tarnagol shehoshet rosho la'avir kli zchuchis, someone's rooster sticks his head inside someone else's glass bowl or whatever it is, the tukabo, and the rooster then lets out a chicken rooster crow, vishavro, and the high pitch shatters the glass. Mishalom nezek shalem. So the owner of the rooster has to pay full damages for the damage caused to the glass utensil. But I'm Rav Yosef, I'm Rabbi Rav, and Rav Yosef says in the name of Rabbi Rav, Sus shetzona v'chamor shen no'ar, a horse or a donkey that brays or neighs, v'shavru kelim v'socha bais, and they shatter someone else's glass utensils, misham chatzinezek. Once again, the owner is liable. And Rashi points out that the difference as to whether you pay chatzinezek or whether you pay nezek shalom is machlokas sumchas and the chachamim in bava b'kama. But either way, there's liability here. When the owner of an animal is told that, oh, your animal made such a loud, high-pitched noise that my glass shattered, so the owner's liable. So the Gemara is asking, doesn't that show that coal sound is considered like actual physical striking and damaging? So why then by the Eved when you yell and deafen him, do you not have a chiv to free him the same way you do when you strike him on the ear directly? Gemara says, Amrale, the Gemara answers, Shiny Adam, when it comes to your voice causing deafness to a person, you're less liable. To Kevin de Bar Dasu, because since the victim here is a thinking person, Iu Mibis Nafshe, he, in a sense, is held responsible for becoming frightened. Kintani's advice says, Hamavis says Chaver, Patim Adin Adam. If you frighten your friend, you are Pater and based in from liability. In other words, he is, in a sense, viewed as the responsible party for allowing himself to be frightened. You're still liable in Shemayim for what you did. Kate said, what's the example? Talk about Aznav Achirsho, you yell in his ear and deafen him. Pater, you pater. But a chazu would talk about Aznav, if you grab him and blow into his ear, a shofar sound, and deafen him, chayev v'chayev. So bottom line is, the call does not result in liability if the victim is an Adam. When the call results in property damage to Kalim, then you are liable. Tanu Abadon, another Brisa says, Hikoho al Eino Vakasa. Let's say you strike some Eved Kanani on the eye and you impair his vision somewhat. Al Shino Vinadadon. You strike him on his tooth and you loosen it. Im Yachol Lehishtamish Behen Achshav. If you are, if he, the Eved, is still able to use his eye or use his tooth, so maybe the function is somewhat more limited now, but it's still usable. Ein Eved Yotz Ben L'Cheres. So then you're not liable, not chayv to free him. Imlav, but if the function has been completely disabled, Eved Yotz Ben L'Cheres, the Eved then does go free. That's one brisa. When you start from full function down to impaired function, depending on whether it's still usable at all, determines whether you have to free him or not. Tanya Yidich, another Brisa says, let's say it was impaired to begin with, his vision, and then you blind him totally. His tooth was loose to begin with, and now you knocked it out. If it had been functional beforehand, despite the impairment, and now it's completely unfunctional, Eved has been lecheres, the Eved goes free. Imlav, if it wasn't functional beforehand, ein Eved yotz ben lecheres, the Eved does not go free. These are two brises, one speaking about starting at 100%, downgrading, so to speak, because of the injury to 50%. Still usable, no chiv to free him. Not usable, free him. Other brises speaks of starting at 50, going down to zero. If it had been usable, and now it's not, free him. If it wasn't usable in the first place, no need to free him. So, Gemara says a tzricha. You need both brisos, says the Gemara. Why? And Rashi explains here that you need both brisos to tell me that there's a chiv to free him if he's unable to use it, even though it's not totally impaired and blinded, he goes free. And if he's totally blinded, even though he had been previously impaired, but if previously he was using it and now he can't, also he goes free. So you both prices. Why? Had you told me the first case where you went from 100 to 50, I would have said, there, Mishum Dmei Kara Nahora Baria. Initially, it was full vision. Ahash Nahora Khisha. And now, it's impaired vision. So, because he can't use his vision anymore, effectively, maybe that's why he goes free. Avalacha Dmei Kara Nami Nahora Khisha. But in the second Brisa, where to begin with, it was impaired vision. Emelo, maybe that would not be reason to free him. The E Ashman Ha, and had you told me the second Brisa only, I would have said Mishum the Samuel Gamri. On the second Brisa, you started at 50%, went down to blind completely. That's why you go free. Abal Hassam de losam legami. But in the case where you went from 100 to 50, even if though now he's not really using his eye as a result, imlo. But maybe since you didn't totally blind him, maybe you're not liable to free him. Tzricha. So I need both prices. Tana Rabban the Baisa says, Rei Shahayu Rabba Rofe, if the owner was a doctor, V'amrlo, and he tells the Eved, V'amrlo Likchol Lo Eino, and he was attempting to, I guess, medicate the eye, V'sama, and he instead blinded him in the process. V'lachzer Lo Shino, he was trying to clean up the tooth and the surrounding gum area. The pila in the process, and knocks it out. Sichik ba'adon v'yatz l'cheres. So the Eved might have requested this treatment, but the Eved says, please medicate my eye, please clean around my teeth. But the joke's on the Yadon, because the Eved set him up for it. Even though perhaps the Eved requested the medical treatment and service here, and the Adon, who was a doctor, was trying to provide it, but end of the day, he knocks out the tooth, he blinds the eye, the Eved goes free. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, no. The Shichasa. Pasuk says, a man strikes his Eved in the eye, the Shichasa, which means that he destroys it, essentially. Then the Eved goes free. So that Pasuk implies, Darshan's Rabban Shimon, that only in that case, Ad Sheiskaven L'Shachasa. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, the Pasuk implies, only if your intent was to destroy it, then you go free. But if the intent was to treat it, medicate, etc., and it ends up by accident, that the tooth fell out, the eye is blinded, you don't send the Eved free in that case. But Rabbanan say you do send them free. What do they dash from the word v'shichasa? They dash it as follows. And Rabbanan says, if a owner of a shivcha is attempting to assist in removing a fetus, and the process of doing so ends up striking the fetus, the baby, in the eye and blinding the baby, pater, he's not liable. My time of why? That's where Chacham Darshan, there was no intent. But there was no intent to touch the eye altogether. In the case of the doctor trying to medicate the Eved's eye, there he was trying to touch the eye, he just wasn't intending to blind the eye. So in that case, Chacham say, he still must free the Eved. But if he wasn't even intending to touch the eye, and he does so inadvertently and blinds the baby inside, he does not then have to free the Eved. The Idach, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, says, Mi vishiches shichasa nafka. He dashes both dinim. Whether you intended to touch the eye but to medicate it, you end up blinding it. Or you didn't intend to touch the eye at all and you ended up inadvertently blinding it, either way, the Eved goes free. The Eved does not go free since it wasn't your intent, according to Shimon ben Gamliel. Idach nechamim, shiches shichasa lo darsh. They don't dash that extra drasha from the word vishichasa. Okay, so machlokas nechamim and Shimon ben Gamliel. If you intended to touch the eye, to treat it, to medicate it, and you by mistake blinded it, do you go free or not? Chachamim say, yes, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, no. Machlokas is, you intended to touch it, you didn't intend to destroy it. What happens in such a scenario where you ended up blinding it? What's the deal? Okay. Stop here by your pages.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Good day to all. Thank you.
Kedushin 24.